You are tuned into the Dr. Tina Show with Dr. Tina Moore. For more, visit drtina.com. On this episode of the Dr. Tina Show, I'm going to be sharing with you how Ozempic does not cause muscle loss and how you are being lied to about that. And I'm also going to be talking with you about how you are shooting yourself literally in the foot if you are not strength training and building muscle when you're trying to get your metabolic health in order. If you have prediabetes or diabetes, listen up, because you can go as low carb as you want all day long. You can take all the Ozempic in the world and you are never gonna get ahead if you're not actively building muscle. And in fact, if you are on a weight loss journey and you're losing weight and you're not actually protecting your muscle actively, you will be in a worse metabolic situation at the end of it than when you started. So let's jump in. Have I told you about my emergency purse meet yet? Emergency purse meet is something I've done since my daughter was little. I've always kept some kind of meat stick in my purse, backpack, work bag, and my travel carry-on bags. Why? Because having the people I'm traveling and hanging out with melt down on me because they didn't eat and are hangry is not my jam. Purse meet has saved my daughter and my marriage on more than one occasion. It's also saved me when my flights are delayed or I can't find any decent food when I'm out or traveling. It's a mom thing. My favorite meat sticks, hands down, are from Paleo Valley. They are naturally fermented, 100% grass-fed and finished beef sticks, and they're my go-to. I always have a few stashed in my purse. In fact, the other day I hopped into my car where my daughter was already waiting for me. I looked down to find a Paleo Valley beef stick wrapper in the middle console and a smiling daughter. "Where did you get that?" I asked. "From your purse, Mom. You always have emergency meat sticks in your purse." Paleo Valley grass-fed beef sticks come in a variety of flavors, and they pack 6 grams of protein per stick. Just enough to keep the hangries at bay so you don't freak out or make poor food choices when you're undernourished and underprepared. Listeners of the Dr. Tina Show can save 15% off right now by heading over to paleovalley.com/Dr. Tina. Be sure to use that specific link and the discount will be automatically applied. You can find it in the show notes as well. Go stock up on your emergency purse meet now at paleovalley.com/Dr. Tina and save 15% off. I've never been big on skincare, but recently started getting more serious as the signs of aging are definitely showing. I've recently started using an incredible skincare line and I'm excited and wanted to share with you. The past few years, my skin has been doing this annoying combo between an allergic prickly heat rash and a perimenopausal rosacea, and it drives me nuts. My buddy Andy Nilo owns a skincare line, and so I reached out to him for help. Andy is the best dude, and he kindly sent me a big box of products to try, and let me just say, wow, I am in love with Alatura skincare. Each and every product from Alatura is a game changer for my skin. The products feel amazing, and my skin is calm and clear again. Alatura is handcrafted natural skincare. Their mission is simple: to provide customers a skincare wellness experience with products made of superior natural ingredients packed with nutrients, minerals, and natural growth factors. Alatura is the skincare line I've been looking for, and it checks all the boxes. It's all natural, cruelty-free, non-toxic, non-GMO, and as organic as possible. Listeners of the Dr. Tina Show can now save 20% off your first order by heading to alatura.com. That's Alitura.com. And be sure to use code Dr. Tina at checkout for the discount, or simply click the link in the show notes. You're going to love it. So first off, this whole Ozempic thing, I don't know what's going on. You know, I've talked about this at length. I actually just even released a 4-part free video training series, which I'm going to make available to you guys today because I'm getting so many questions about it. It came and it went, and then everybody went nuts and said, we have to have access. We want to see it. We want to see it again. We want to show it to our doctors. So I'm going to make that available in the show notes to you guys. So be sure to check that out and share your name and email with me there, and I will send it right out to you. I talk about this in part two, but I'm going to talk about it a little deeper today. And first, I want to share a story with you. I get messages, a lot of messages, all the time on my DMs, in my emails, from people saying, I've been following you for whatever period of time, and I'm doing all the things. I'm doing all the things you teach about and talk about, and I've lost 25 pounds, or I've lost 65 pounds, and some people have lost 100 pounds just doing the simple strategies that I talk about on here for free. And they're so excited, and I want to be so excited for them, but then the next sentence is, now I'm going to start strength training.
And it crushes my soul, you guys. It literally, my heart drops into my stomach when I hear that. And this is why. When you lose weight on any low-calorie diet or caloric-restricted diet, and you lose what you think is fat, you are losing potentially 20 to 40% of your muscle. Somewhere on average about 25 to 30. Somewhere in there. That's the average muscle, lean muscle mass loss when you are losing weight and you're not actively protecting your muscle through prioritizing your protein macros and strength training. That's despite what route you're taking. You could be doing low calorie, you could be doing caloric restriction. Well, that's the same thing, but you know, you could be changing up your macros. Now, if you're eating a protein heavy, there is one caveat. If you're eating a protein heavy diet, you are definitely protecting your muscle more, even if you're going low calorie. But most people are not. Most people are just eating less of the foods they were already eating. A lot of folks, when they find out they have prediabetes or diabetes, they message me. They're often angry and they say, I'm doing everything right, quote unquote, everything right. I just got diagnosed with prediabetes. I'm thin. This is, you guys, this is not exclusive to heavy set folks or people with extra adiposity to lose. This is across the board. It doesn't matter what size you are. If you're not rocking healthy muscle mass, skeletal muscle mass, and the only way to do that is through strength training. It's not just by luck and sitting around and hoping it happens or good genes even. If you're not rocking good skeletal muscle mass, you will end up, in my clinical opinion, you will end up pre-diabetic or diabetic. It's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of age. I've talked about this at length all over the podcast. So we're going to try to put it all into one episode today for you so that this can be the one I point to, because I get this all the time and people say, I'm doing everything right, Dr. Tina, and I'm just so upset because my doctor said I'm pre-diabetic. What is going wrong? I eat a ton of meat. I do everything you say. And then I ask, are you strength training? And they always say no. They always say no. And I'm just like, oh, I want to beat my head into the wall at this point. I don't know how to get it through people's brains that you have to be strength training. This is non-negotiable. I'm not sure if the word non-negotiable is not translating, but this is literally non-negotiable. So do not write me and tell me you're doing everything right when you're not strength training, because that is 9/10 of the equation. I'll tell you what, my patients who came to see me in clinic, I did regenerative injection therapies, which means I was using natural solutions and more often than not, their own bodily fluids, like their own blood, their own fat for stem cells. I was using their own tissues to process out what I needed and re-inject it, concentrate it down, re-inject it into them. And do you know the one category of patient who always got better, no matter what? They always had great improvement. I could always look them straight in the eye with truth and say, you're going to get phenomenal results from this. It was the people who had good muscle mass. Now, they could have been young dudes eating, you know, junk food and drinking Mountain Dew. Seriously, they could have had the worst diets in the world and they would still do awesome because they were strength training and they had awesome muscle mass. Muscle mass will take you extremely far in this world. And if you don't have it, you are basically sitting with one foot in the grave, because any good viral infection, any chronic illness, the big C word, both the big C words can come on through and you are in trouble if you don't have adequate muscle mass. This is non-negotiable. Those folks always did great, no matter what. No matter if their hormones were off, no matter if their diet was shoddy, even if they drank too much alcohol, it didn't matter. If they were strength training several times a week, they always got great results, which means they were in a regenerative mode. That's what that is telling me. And when I started seeing that patient after patient after patient, I was like, I better start strength training. And then I started studying up on muscles and myokines and what myokines do. Myokines are these molecules that are secreted from your muscle and they travel all over the body and do phenomenal things. If you think about cytokines, remember the dreaded cytokine storm? Cytokines and myokines are actually the same molecule. It just depends on where they come from. If they're coming out of your fat, they are inflammatory and they are cytokines. If they're coming out of your muscle, they are anti-inflammatory and they are myokines, and they are doing phenomenal things all throughout your body. And we know more and more about this each year. The list gets longer of what myokines do. If you're not actively strength training, you're not secreting myokines, and you literally could be building an anti-inflammatory factory on your body in real time to ameliorate so many illnesses and chronic illnesses and symptoms and issues and aches and pains, but y'all don't want to do it. Y'all just want to sit back and tell me it's too hard, or you don't know where to start, or, you know, you're going to lose the weight first and then you're going to start the strength training. If you're losing the weight first, you are losing your muscle mass, and your muscle mass is your metabolic sink. It's your mop. It pulls up all the glucose. And I'm going to tell you how in a second, and you're going to understand this better, why this is completely non-negotiable. Aside from the myokines that you definitely clearly need, all of us do. So if your muscle mass is your metabolic engine or your metabolic sink or your mop to mop up all that extra blood glucose and blood sugars floating around, and you start losing weight, and we know that you're going to lose 20 to 30%, let's say, of your lean muscle mass in the process of losing weight overall. There's no way out of that unless you are actively protecting your muscle like it's your job. So what happens is you've just lost some of your muscle mass. Sure, you lost, you know, let's say you've lost 40 pounds. Woohoo! That's awesome. You're smaller, your waist is smaller, your butt's smaller, you fit in a smaller size jeans, you're really excited, but you weren't actively strength training during that process. You just lost 20 to 30% of your metabolic engine. So now, not only is your brain reprogrammed, in weight loss, your brain literally reprograms itself to make it harder to maintain that weight loss. And you are more inclined to gain the weight back. And that's a long process, and it's a bit complicated, and it goes into a lot of signaling pathways and signaling peptide hormones, but when including GLP-1. But if you are in that situation where you're now having to work harder anyway to maintain that smaller weight size, and you just lost 20 to 30% of your muscle, how do you think that's going to go? It's a disaster, you guys. It's an absolute disaster. And so these folks online who are railing against Ozempic, saying it's going to kill you, you're going to lose all your muscle mass, and you're going to end up worse off than you started. Yes, they're totally correct if you're not doing this right. That's why I created Ozempic Done Right University in the first place, is because I wanted to have a place where there was a comprehensive program so that you guys understand how to do this right. We do not want you more metabolically busted than when you started. You may be smaller, but you're going to be more metabolically unsound. You're going to end up more skinny fat, which is not good. Folks who are skinny fat are actually dealing with a higher risk of mortality from all causes than people who are obese and metabolically busted. So if you're skinny and metabolically busted, which is a lot of people, you're in worse shape for virtually every reason. And every illness that comes through, you run a higher risk of succumbing to than if you were metabolically busted and carrying around excess adipose. So hopefully that point's made. You got to protect your muscle mass. How do you do that? You prioritize your macros and you strength train. And then the next question I get from people is, can you develop a strength training program for people with bad knees? What about if I have bad shoulders? What if I have a painful rib? What if I get headaches? What if I don't like it? What if I don't know what to do? And honestly, you guys, I don't know what to tell you to do either. You need to hire a strength and conditioning coach, and you need to have them help you figure this out. If that's not an option, consider joining a group program where you can pay less money. I think having eyeballs on you is ideal. Having somebody to actually watch you do this, because this is a skill set that you need to learn, and have somebody walk you through this for a period of time, more than just three sessions, and learn the skill so that you can carry that with you. This is so important that you develop this skill and you continue this skill on. There are so many different ways to go about this, and that's not what this podcast episode is about. I've done multiple podcast episodes on strength training and why strength training is so important, so I'm not going to keep belaboring that. But the point here today is, if you are actively losing weight, whether you're using Ozempic or not, you are going to trash your metabolic engine by losing a ton of it, and then you are going to be in a worse state than when you started. Not only is your brain going to be reprogrammed to make it harder for you, even if you do have muscle mass, that part is just happening, because that's what happens. When you lose weight, your body wants to regain it. And so you're already dealing with that, and now you've just lost a ton of muscle in the process. Can you see now what a complete disaster that is? So let's talk for a minute about what insulin resistance is. Insulin is, I think of it like the key that opens the lock that lets the glucose into the cell to be used for fuel. That's a simplistic kindergarten version. But what happens is insulin receptors are on your cell. insulin binds the insulin receptor, a signal gets sent inside the cell. There is what's called a GLUT4 receptor living in the cell. There's multiple of them. And they cannot make their way out to the membrane, to the cell membrane, to open and receive the glucose without insulin. Okay, so we need insulin and we need GLUT4 receptors. How do we make more GLUT4 receptors? Muscle. GLUT4 receptors are present in your fat and in your muscle. All right, so we need more muscle because we can build that. We don't want more fat. That's not going to help us. Fat is inflammatory in most cases. So we want to have enough GLUT4 receptors to make their way out to the cell surface to open and let all the glucose in so the glucose can be used for fuel. That's how your body works. I know you ketosis people want to argue with me. You can't stay in ketosis forever. That is my clinical opinion. It's not sustainable. It's a tool we use to go in and out of. That's, I think, the best approach with keto. For everyone who's been wondering what I think about keto, I do not think you should live there. It will age you. Look at everyone who's done keto for a long time. They look old AF. it's not a good look. So we need to have insulin present. Well, what happens is people become insulin resistant because they are doing a myriad of things, right? They don't have enough muscle mass. Insulin resistance starts with lack of muscle. So you start to have sarcopenia, you start to have muscle wasting, and you start to have lack of muscle. On top of it, you may be eating a high refined carbohydrate diet and getting too many sugars in your mouth in the first place. And those are converting into your blood sugar being high. And then your pancreas is cranking out insulin to try to meet the need. And eventually there's so much going on in the cell. There's like a ton of insulin receptors, a ton of insulin's being brought in, a ton of glucose is coming in, and the cell needs to protect itself. And it's like, yo, we have had enough of this nonsense. We're shutting this down. And they start cleaving off insulin receptors. So now you've got a ton of insulin being pumped out of the pancreas, but you have no receptors or very low receptors. This happens with every hormone. Insulin's a hormone. It happens with every hormone or peptide, peptides or hormones, that becomes excess in your body. Whenever you have an excess of something, your body starts cleaving off receptors to it. Cortisol, testosterone, progesterone, you name it. Whatever is too high in the body will start cleaving off receptors and the cells will stop hearing the signal. So now we don't have enough insulin receptors to translocate those GLUT4 receptors to the cell surface to open and bring in the glucose. So now the cell's starving. The brain thinks it's starving. You keep gobbling food up, and now you're in this vicious cycle. So how do you get out of it? You could low carb yourself to death. That was the big thing since the 2000s up until now. It's been very in vogue to go low carb. And there's tons of people all over the internet with like low carb accounts and look at all my low carb meals. And they will lose some fat for a while and they will get their blood sugars in check for a while. And I absolutely think that low carb intermittently is the way to go. If you stay low carb forever, again, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot, kind of like the keto folks. That's a topic for another day. And you actually induce more insulin resistance, by the way. But if you build muscle, you build more insulin receptors, you build more cells because that's what muscle growth is, right? It's adding new cells to the body. It's the one organ we can build actively. So you get more insulin receptors, you get more GLUT4 receptors, everything's working better, and the muscle actually acts like a mop. It just sucks up all that excess blood glucose. Now your blood sugars are going down. The body can relax. It doesn't have to keep cranking out the insulin. Things start to regulate. None of this will happen without skeletal muscle mass added. So if you're losing weight and you're losing muscle, do you see how you're shooting yourself in the foot? You see this? So please don't message me telling me you're doing everything right and you're so frustrated if you're not in the gym 3 times a week. That's it. I'm not even going to try to be nice about saying that. That's just it. That's where we're at. So if you need to get started, I actually have a program. I've had it out for a while. I've taken it down and put it back up a few times, but I've finally got it all into one portal. It's inexpensive. It's called my Dr. Tina Strength Corner. It will get you started and it's a great place to start. It's a great place if you're a beginner. It's a great place if you are an intermediate and you just want some exercises. There's some rehab in there. There's some tutorials on how to do the movements correctly, but I still want to tell you this does not replace eyeballs on you from a trained expert. So if you can spend your money on a strength and conditioning coach that you go see in person, you're going to get better results. But if you need a place to start, I've got you covered. I got it. So we talked about insulin resistance. You know how that works. We can't have metabolic health without our insulin being in check. We can't have insulin resistance roaring and expect good things to happen. Besides, insulin's pro-grow. So it grows everything. It grows your muscle. So that's great. If you're strength training and you've got a lot of excess insulin floating around, that's why people get phenomenal gains in the beginning, because they're like swimming in sugar and insulin, which is what your muscles need to grow. So your muscles are like, woohoo! But you will plateau, and hopefully the muscle will start to, if you're eating well, will start to, you know, offset the issue. But you can't have optimized metabolic health without muscle mass, period. And insulin resistance is what leads you into type 2 diabetes. And I've said this before, when you are there, once you get to type 2 diabetes, you've been rocking metabolic dysfunction for a decade or two, and you are severely metabolically busted at that point. Your mitochondria are on the struggle bus, and you are really in a lot of trouble. And diabetics, more often than not, are struggling with obesity because insulin, when you're swimming in it, it loves to sequester your calories into your fat cells. Remember, I told you there's GLUT4 receptors in there. Loves to lock up that fat. Loves to grow fat and lock it up. That's what insulin does. It's a mess. So if you got a ton of insulin and a ton of glucose floating around because you're cranking refined carbohydrates all day, you're in a world of trouble, and that's what makes you fat. That's it. That's the recipe of how it goes. So when people are like, it's calories in, calories out, that's it. Yes, and. Like, let's have a nuanced discussion about insulin and metabolic health, right? And it's not just all about insulin and metabolic health. Calories do matter. So it's yes, and. And hormones come into play. And I've done lots of podcasts about hormones. You guys can go back and listen to that. So when you strength train, you get improved insulin sensitivity, you get improved glucose uptake, all your cells start working better, and your fat doesn't have to have the advantage anymore. So you start to lose weight. And muscle acts almost as a, you know, in the simplistic way, it's just a constant burner. The more muscle you have on your body, the more fat you're chewing up. Muscle eats fat, if you want to look at it really simplistically. So I think the biggest misconception that has happened, you know, when I was young, it was, and I think it's still ridiculous, it's still promoted by the American Diabetes Association, is to eat a high carbohydrate diet, which I think is nonsense. I mean, that whole scene is just medieval. There's so many things in medicine that are just medieval, but that one's really, that's right up there with how they manage thyroid. It's just medieval. But nobody's talking about strength training still. And here's the caveat. I survey my audience every now and then, and I say, what do you want to hear about? And everybody wants to hear, by and large, about hormones. Interestingly, they want to hear the least about metabolic health and strength training, which is the one thing I want to talk about the most. But here's why that, I think, is ironic. You cannot have balanced hormones or even ideal hormone health or hormone optimization if you don't have muscle mass. It's impossible, and you can't do it without optimal metabolic health. So let's back up. You can't have optimized hormones without optimized metabolic health, and you can't have optimized metabolic health without optimized muscle mass. You see? So this is why strength training is non-negotiable. We have to work on our metabolic health. That is the only way we're going to have happy hormones. That's it, in a nutshell. That's how it works. And so it's kind of a moot point for me to talk about estrogen when you have elevated insulin and people are walking. I mean, the large majority of U.S. adults, close to 100%, have some level of busted metabolic health and therefore some level of insulin resistance. It screws up the receptor, all of your hormonal receptors, really. But estrogen gets completely out of whack, and you end up in an estrogen dominant state, and the whole thing's a disaster. And here's the caveat. When you're going through menopause and you start into that process, some will call that perimenopause, you screw up, your insulin resistance gets screwed up just by default of your estrogen plummeting. So they're very intimately related. And while you can't control whether your ovaries are starting to, you know, decrease output, and your adrenals are decreasing output of estrogen and other hormones as we age, as especially as women, as we walk into menopause, you can control more readily your metabolic health, and you can absolutely control your muscle mass. So that's the one thing I figured out when I was heading into 40. I was like, oh, that's the one factor I can control. That's the one. I can try to live a more optimized life and decrease my stress and try to really keep my hormones happiest, decrease my alcohol. I mean, all of the, you know, eat good food. All of those factors are within my control as well to some degree. The stress, I can't completely control how the outside world functions, right? And I can try to control my response to it. I can control my diet for the most part. I can control what I put in my mouth. I can control factors of my sleep. As your hormones get screwed up, your sleep will start to get screwed up. But the one thing I can control to large part is my muscle mass. So that's where I decided to focus, and that's why we're here today. This is what I got all geeked out on and love talking to you guys about. So I would say the biggest misconception about diabetes prevention is that there's absolutely no conversation about strength training. They're like, just exercise. Short term, yeah, any movement will help. Short term, we're going to get your glucose in better control. We're going to get your blood sugar handling more balanced out. I mean, any kind of exercise is helpful, especially a good walk after a meal, especially a carbohydrate meal. That's going to be significantly helpful for balancing your blood sugars. But long game, it's still not going to cut it when you don't have muscle mass, right? It doesn't matter how low carb, how much you walk, how much you run, how much you yoga, how much you Pilates. If you don't have good muscle mass, it ain't going to work. I just did a podcast episode about my thoughts around Pilates versus strength training, and I'll save you the time if you don't want to go back and listen to it, although I think it's a good episode. You have to do both. Pilates does not replace strength training. Are you magnesium deficient? 75% of people are. Lack of adequate levels of an essential mineral like magnesium is going to impact several systems, as hundreds of biochemical reactions in the body are magnesium dependent. Magnesium really is one supplement that I believe to be a non-negotiable when it comes to my daily supplement stack. So, how can you tell if you're magnesium deficient? Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you sometimes constipated? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency. These are just a few examples. And while most magnesium products only contain one or two forms of magnesium, I found a blend that contains seven different forms of the mineral. It's called Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers, and I take it every day. Magnesium Breakthrough helps improve my digestion, supports my muscle recovery, and supports healthy bone density. Simplify your life and your routine with this all-natural, full-spectrum magnesium supplement. Head to bioptimizers.com/Dr. Tina and use promo code Dr. Tina during checkout to save 10% on your order. In addition to the 10% off you'll get with my link, you can get free gifts with purchase, up to 2 travel-sized bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. But act fast. This is a limited-time offer. Link is in the show notes. You know what to do. And then let's talk about GLP-1 agonists, because that's why a lot of you are here. GLP-1 agonists protect and regenerate muscle tissue. They actually induce myogenesis and muscle protein synthesis. Let me repeat that. The way that they act in the body, the mechanism of action, they actually signal pathways to regenerate and protect and make muscle work better and induce myogenesis and muscle protein synthesis. That's it. We have multiple studies to show this. I don't know why people are saying that they directly cause muscle loss. That is complete bullshit. And the people saying it are smart enough to open the same studies I am. This is not mysterious data that only I'm finding through some special database. This is all over the internet. One merely needs to go look. And so it's really frustrating to hear these longevity doctors and these so-called experts talk about how Ozempic causes muscle loss. That is a dosing and management issue and in large part a compliance issue on the patient's part. So they're being overdosed, they're given too high a dose, it's crushing their appetite, so they don't want to eat, so they end up in a massive caloric restriction. They're not being counseled on what foods to eat, so they're just eating less of the junk that they were already eating, and then they're not strength training. So if you're not protecting your muscle like it's your job, like your life depends on it, because it literally does depend on it, guys. Your life literally depends on your muscle mass at the end of the day. If I were asked, what would be my most valuable asset going into old age? I would tell you that my muscle mass reigns supreme over my hormones, even over my immune function, because my hormones are going to be better and my immune function will only be optimized with muscle mass. Going into any sickness or illness without adequate muscle mass is a disaster. Frailty is the number one cause of death in almost all cases. And you don't have to be of small stature to be frail. People think of frailty and they think of the skinny, tiny little old person. You can be quite obese and be quite frail because you're more fat than you are muscle. It's about body composition. So to me, your muscle is your insurance. That's your health insurance, guys. That's where you should be spending your money. That's where you should be spending your effort and your time. It's your health insurance at the end of the day. And when I went into any of the major illnesses I've had in the past few years, I always thought, well, thank God I've got muscle. You know, I mean, I'm going in as best I can. And really, and so I work on my muscle mass quite literally for that, for longevity, for the zombie apocalypse, for all of it. It's not just about aesthetics. Yeah, it's nice to have a nice figure, but I have severe body dysmorphia. I do not look in the mirror and think, wow, you have a stellar figure. I really do look in the mirror though, and I'm like, how's my muscle mass doing? Now, in recent months, I went towards more of a Pilates heavy workout routine. And I skimped on the strength training a bit because I've just really been trying to let my back heal. Because some of you know, I went through some pretty severe back issues over the past couple of years. And I've just been experimenting and I have completely lost my butt. And your butt, I need to do a whole podcast just on that. Your glutes are really the center of your vitality. If you have a flat butt, you are low vitality, in my opinion. A good, healthy set of glutes is really going to take you far, literally and figuratively. So, you know, that booty's it. Let's go back to GLP-1s though, and then we'll wrap this up. So they actually increase the availability of nutrients like amino acids, and they increase vascularity to the muscle. So they deliver the nutrients, which is how you build muscle. That's muscle protein synthesis is contingent on amino acid supply. They upregulate myogenic factors in skeletal muscle in mice and human studies both. They showed with varying levels of significance that GLP-1 receptor agonists led to decreases in muscle atrophy, decreases in muscle inflammation, and decreases in muscle adiposity. As you get old in age and you start to undergo sarcopenia, which is kind of the chicken and egg start to insulin resistance. It's like, what started it? Was it the sarcopenia inducing the insulin resistance, or did the insulin resistance induce the sarcopenia? In either case, you end up with marbling of your muscle. You end up with fatty muscle, and fatty muscle is disaster. It becomes inflamed. It doesn't function right. You cannot rely on it the way you used to. This is why people fall and break hips. That's really what I'm gunning against for life, is to not break a hip. So GLP-1s actually decrease all of those negative impacts, which I think is just phenomenal because they heal your metabolism at the end of the day. If done right, they heal your metabolism. Not cranked out, not overdosed like most people are getting, but in small doses that are done well. When this is done well, these are really miracle peptides. Like I said, improvement in muscle microvasculature, improvement in muscle endurance, promotion of muscle mitochondrial biogenesis. You've probably heard me say this before on podcasts, but people talk about protecting their mitochondria, or their mitochondria is sick, and they're like, well, protect the cell membrane and take these supplements. And yeah, that's all true and well and good. But I'm over here like, why aren't we just adding more? Can we just add some more mitochondria to make up for some of the ones that are petering out? And you can only do that through muscle, by adding muscle to your body. You can regenerate some of the mitochondria you currently have, but if you're trying to take a sick mitochondria and make it well and really make it robust, yes, like cold plunge, fasting, those things are going to be somewhat helpful. But I still think a better solution is to do that and build some, right? Add muscle to the frame. Add a slab of meat to this skeleton, to this meat suit. That's what we are made up of. They improve muscle function and architecture. So like I said, they help with that fatty infiltrate, help avoid it, which is wonderful. And they actually reduce the expression of atrophy-related genes like MRF1 and atrogen-1. So they reduce the expression of atrophy-related genes. These are seriously miraculous peptides, in my opinion. So done right and dosed appropriately, they induce muscle protein synthesis and they're muscle protective. So that's why I don't believe at all that GLP-1s cause muscle loss. That is a flat-out lie. It's misinformation. Whoever's saying it is spreading misinformation, and it's getting really old hearing it. And if you aren't actively building muscle mass, then you really can't get on top of your metabolic health in any way, shape, or form. What you do achieve will be transient at best. And that is disappointing because people are putting a lot of good work in. And I want to commend all of you who are trying. I want to applaud you all. We're all working on it. We're all headed towards more and more insulin resistance as we age. It's called inflammaging. It's just part of it. So we have to fight for the muscle that we have, especially as we get older. So if you're not currently strength training, I highly encourage you to start. Like I said, I've got a program for you. It's low cost. It will be a helpful place to start. If you can spring for it, hire yourself a strength and conditioning coach. A good place to start with that, I think, is to find somebody who's good at working with older folks. That's really the best luck you're going to have. If you're trying to go for somebody who's going to put you into metabolic overload, I think that's kind of a dumpster fire waiting to happen for most people. I know that it's trendy to watch people just crush their workouts and kill themselves and end up in a sweat angel on the floor, but that's not great when you're in menopause. It's not going to serve you. So find someone who's good with working with older folks and ask. You have to interview these folks. I went around and interviewed several strength and conditioning coaches before I landed on the one that I am currently with, who I've been with for years and years. So you have to really do your homework and do your due diligence and just ask them, like, are you good at training older folks? And if they put you through the paces a few times and you end up feeling hurt, or you end up feeling metabolically exhausted and you're so tired afterwards you can't see straight on a regular basis, find someone new. Don't be afraid to go interview someone else and give that a try. And I know that resources are limited, and I know that we don't all live in big towns where we have lots of options, but you have to keep trying. I know people who live in the most remote places and they find people to work with. And there's lots of options online. But if you're older or you have any orthopedic faults, I highly encourage you to find somebody that can get eyeballs on you and help you with your form so that you don't hurt yourself worse. Or worse yet, you end up just aggravating an already aggravated joint and then you get discouraged or you get hurt and you don't want to do it anymore. And so you quit. We don't want any quitting. We want success, right? So it's a series of small wins. Just know this is going to take years and years. Years, you guys, years. I didn't see any muscle gains for years. You got to get your protein in. I'm going to leave that up to you. I would say roughly, since we're going to be talking pounds here because we're in the US, if you're doing like 0.7 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, you should be in a good muscle protein synthesis mode. You can do more. I know that some people like myself have a low appetite, and that's really hard and it's really daunting to eat that much food, and my stomach doesn't want to hold that much food ever. So I'm just kind of a low eater. I'm an under eater to some degree. I always have been. And when I've tried to force it, I end up feeling weird and looking weird, and it's just, I don't like it. So good data on 0.7 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, and you play with that based on how active you are. I wouldn't go below 0.7. So just take 0.7 on your calculator and multiply it by your pounds of body weight, and that'll give you your grams. And that's how much you should be eating. And just know that a piece of protein like the size of your palm of your hand is going to be, in the thickness of your palm, is going to be about 30 grams. 5 eggs is 30 grams. I should really make a 30 gram cheat sheet. But just look it up. This stuff is readily available on the internet. This isn't like rocket science, you know? But usually it's just, I've just been telling people for years and years, the palm of your hand, not with your fingers necessarily, but the palm of your hand. So a burger patty, a good nice size burger patty, that's the thickness of my palm, would be about a quarter pounder cooked. And that's going to be 30 grams about. And I try to get like 3 of those in a day. I love protein powder as well. I'll put a link in for Paleo Valley. They make a great protein powder. And I think that they do a wonderful job. It's grass fed. It's clean. It's a wonderful whey protein powder. And I am not opposed to a couple scoops of protein powder a day. I've seen miracles with that, you guys. I've had little tiny elderly patients who were so atrophied and so sarcopenic, and I put them on 2 scoops of protein powder a day and they come back and it's a game changer. So however we got to get it in, we got to get it in. And I will leave that up to you, and make sure you're hitting the weights 2 to 3 times a week. You don't have to be in there forever. You don't have to be crushing yourself. You will get better gains. You will have less injury, and you will have a much better idea of what you're doing. And it'll be more rewarding for you if you can hire a strength and conditioning coach. And just know that you can go in with a girlfriend or a friend or partner, and it will be less money to train 2 of you at the same time. If that's too cost prohibitive, think about doing like a small group coaching. So sometimes like 5 or 6 people, different places will do that. And you all get enough attention to keep yourself safe and to get the gains that you seek, and hurrah, right? So there's nothing better than getting strong. It is a superpower. It's a sixth sense. You don't know it until you have it, and you don't realize how important it is till you start to lose it. I've lost it a few times for various reasons, through illness, through injury, and the build back is always humbling. We all start somewhere. We all start at zero, and we go from there. So make it a priority this year through the remainder of 2024, and I will see you guys in the next episode. Thanks for listening to the Dr. Tina Show. Please be sure to follow me on Instagram at Dr. Tina, that's D-R-T-Y-N-A, and Dr. Tina 2.0, as well as visit my website at drtina.com. This is a Resonant Media production produced by Drake Peterson and mixed by Chris McCone. The theme song is by John the Gilt. As always, you can email the show at podcast@drtina.com. And if you like this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. See you next week. This podcast is for general informational purposes only. It does not constitute the practices of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. I am a doctor, but I am not your doctor. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is intended not to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions.